Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned for you today. We're going to start out during the first hour talking to Dr. Milan Watfi about his new book, Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes, A Darwinian Interpretation of Type 2 Diabetes and Related Disorders. Right up my alley. You know that. Then we're going to change it up, and we're going to be joined by TNA superstar Rob Terry, as we talk about the training styles that enhance coordinated working relationships between the nervous system and muscular systems. Very, very important. In short, this is functional training 101. It's going to be good stuff because here's a guy who is a big 300-pound agile athlete who obviously understands something about functional training. Do have to plug AgeForce once again. AgeForce is offering a 30-day free trial on their fat burner patch, which now includes the over-the-counter version of thyroid hormone T2 and 7-keto DHEA, both shown to be able to help your body rid itself of body fat. You can get a 30-day free trial by going to superhumanradio.com, clicking the AgeForce banner ad, and using the coupon code BURNBODYFAT, all one word. What do you have to lose other than a few pounds of fat? Welcome to the show, Dr. Watfi. How are you?
Fine. Hello.
Okay. So, first of all, why did you take the time to write this book? What is it that inspired you to write the book, Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes?
Yeah, that has a fairly long history. I was trained as a microbiologist and biochemist, but then I shifted to wildlife research, and I worked on wild animals. I worked on elephants and a number of other mammals in some of the Indian national parks and sanctuaries. And while doing that, I was actually looking at the health aspects of wild animals. And while doing that, I picked up the concept that disease is an ecological process. Okay. So at that time, I was looking at parasites and infectious diseases of animals.
Okay.
But later on, the same concept I found useful for non-infectious diseases like diabetes as well. Okay. And so I actually interacted quite accidentally with a diabetes research group. And when I looked at their work and their data, I said that I can see ecology here. And that's how we got into developing a concept.
Okay, so this is really an intriguing concept to me, first of all, because one of the things that I've been saying a lot recently is the relationship between modern disease and what we know about evolutionary downward pressures.
Yes.
And selection pressures. So, you know, I've said things on the show like childhood obesity is at an all-time high. Hmm. When these children become obese as children, they tend to have fertility issues later on.
Yes.
This is the body's way of selection pressure. We're going to have children who will not be able to pass on their gene lines. And 150 years from now, the gene pool is going to be affected because these children will not be able to reproduce. They're erasing their gene contributions. This is the new evolutionary selection pressure. It's not famine. It's not ice age. It is actually, in my humble opinion, it's about information. Your information about nutrition, information about disease in general will end up causing this new evolutionary selection pressure. What do you think about that statement? Am I off base completely, or am I even a partial correct?
Yeah, well, evolution has not stopped. Unlike some people believe that now there is no evolution in humans, which is not true. Evolution is a continual process. We will keep on evolving, although it's a very slow process. And the modern challenges are different than the challenges that we faced in the past. But evolution is a very slow process. So when the nature of challenges change, our biology doesn't change that rapidly. Okay, so now you are right that the challenges today are very different. And evolution in future might take a different shape. It's extremely hard to predict what shape it would take.
Okay. All right, so now let's talk a little bit about, let's go back to the book for just a moment, okay?
Yes.
In the book, you delve into type 2 diabetes or metabolic syndrome, whatever you want to call it. And
yes.
What have you identified between the relationship between evolution and the development of these diseases in modern time?
Right. So the concept has been around for some time, for quite some time actually, that there is a mismatch between the challenges in which we evolved and the challenges that we face today. Or the people have mostly talked about diet. But diet is not the only thing. A lot of things have changed. And I'm mainly looking at behavior. Okay, so a lot of human behavior, social relationships have changed. For example, feeding was always related to foraging in the past.
Right.
So today food is not related to foraging. It is completely segregated. Okay, so we don't have to hunt. We don't have to gather in order to feed. Okay, and then many of the mechanisms of food regulation are related to foraging. Okay, so food regulation in humans is not entirely a metabolic thing. It is a lot of behavioral mechanisms involved in regulating food intake. Now today all these behavioral mechanisms have vanished. So for example, our ancestors were scavengers, they were hunters, they were gatherers. In all these activities, there is a risk involved. Okay, so if you are scavenging, you are competing with other carnivores. If you are hunting, then it's a risky activity. Even if you are gathering, if you are just foraging out in the wild, there is a risk of predation. Okay, there are predators around you. There are large mammals around you, like elephants or rhinos. And then you have to forage in spite of this risk. Well, which means that you have to optimize your foraging as opposed to the risk. So if you are already full, you will not go out and forage because it's unnecessarily taking risk.
Because it's danger. It's a dangerous practice.
Yeah, foraging is a dangerous activity, right? So, and then this is linked through some biochemical pathways. So there are two peptides in the brain called CART and alpha MSH. And these peptides interact with leptin, which is produced by the adipose tissue, right? And the interaction of these three peptides is such that if you have more of fat, you have more of leptin. And leptin regulates the production of CART and alpha MSH. So if you have more leptin, you have more of CART and alpha MSH. And these are fear peptides. So they keep you...
Vigilant.
Right.
Yes.
So if these peptides are high, then you are a risk avoider, right? Which means if your fat levels are high, your leptin levels are high, you will be a risk avoider, and therefore you will not go out and forage. On the other hand, if CART and alpha MSH levels are high, it means that the perceived risk is more, then the leptin action is higher. Leptin is more active, which means that even if you have lower levels of leptin, you will not go out.
Right.
So our systems are designed in such a way that these systems link feeding with risk optimization. Right? And that's how our feeding intake is controlled.
How does that relate to today? That we don't, approaching the refrigerator or the cupboard
right.
is not a scary scenario. So what?
It's not a dangerous activity at all. And therefore, our food regulation mechanisms, which evolved for a hunter-gatherer life, are no more effective today.
Oh, so you know what? You just solved the whole obesity problem. We just have to put poisonous snakes in front of the refrigerator.
There are alternatives. So, for example, any kind of aggressive activity, it could be football.
Right.
Okay? So any kind of aggressive activity increases these peptides. So the simple thing is to take part in aggressive games, right? So it is not burning calories. It is the kind of hormones and these peptides that respond to behavior.
Interesting. Very interesting. This is an aspect that we've talked about the relationship between obesity and behavior from the standpoint of the reward system. That right. has been elucidated to a great degree. We know that certain foods present reward, almost right. drug-like effects to the brain. This is an op. Yes. This is the braking mechanism. That's the gas pedal. This is the braking mechanism that keeps the body from wanting more food. But it's not related to appetite. It's related to appetite not being as important as fear.
Right. There is an interaction between fear and appetite, and we have lost that interaction now.
Wow, that's interesting. That's amazing. So now, I mean, if you are an evolutionist, then you're looking out, then there's going to be a new regulator, we would hope, a new mechanism yeah. that will start yeah. to evolve as part of the ecology, evolve into us to help make up for that. What about this theory that those who are obese are actually genetically gifted because the being thrifty and producing fat was a good thing in a time when food was scarce and predictability yeah. of food was scarce.
Yeah, this concept has been there from the 1960s. So there's a person called James Neal who talked about thrifty gene for the first time. For his time and the knowledge that he had, it was an interesting concept. But today we know that the thrift thing does not work for a number of reasons. Number one, if you compare it to species which are really thrifty, so for example, the migratory birds
right.
that store fat for a long time, and during migration, they burn it out. Okay, and they can migrate for 3,000 miles and so on. Right. So they have this very, very beautifully built physiology in which they can store fat and they can burn the fat when needed. And during migration, they may not feed at all. They completely survive on the stored fat. Well, that kind of physiology we just do not have. So when humans starve, we start burning muscle proteins much before our fat storage is consumed. Whereas these birds will completely utilize the fat.
Mm.
Okay, they will not utilize proteins. So actually, human bodies are not built to store fat and reutilize it efficiently. Okay, so we are not really built in for thrift. The other point is, if thrift is adaptive, then it is adaptive to everyone. Why should there be a polymorphism? Why should some people be more prone to become obese and others not? Okay, so there are a number of problems with the thrifty hypothesis. And it is under attack. During the last decade or so, a number of people have criticized the thriftiness paradigm. So at some stage, we have to give it up and we have to look for alternatives.
Okay. We're going a little long. I have one more question, because then when we go to the break, I want to change the discussion a little bit. But
yes.
My audience and myself, we are engaged in heavy resistance training. Huh. And that training puts us in positions quite often where we are, to some degree, tentative or even afraid. Those of us who, say, perform squats and mm-hmm. deadlifts with very, very heavy weight, hundreds and hundreds of pounds, we
yeah.
know that there is a fear component. When you're getting ready to squat, you're anxious, you're nervous about this, and then you are, because you're worried that maybe a vertebrae will break, or maybe you won't be able to hold the weight and you'll collapse and so on. So exercise like that has a fear component, does that change those of us who engage in that kind of exercise, or maybe the rugby player or the football player where there's always the threat of injury, and the body is being pounded. Is there an advantage to for those of us who engage in that, in that those peptides that are linked to fear and our ability to maintain, say, a normal body weight or lack of body fat?
Yeah. I would say that the aggression component of exercise is extremely important. Aggression and the frequency of minor injuries. Okay. Which were actually extremely common in the wilderness. When you walk out without shoes or without any protective cover, and walk through the wilderness, through thorns, through bush and everything. Minor injuries is extremely common. Now, today we have stopped getting injuries. We have stopped even anticipating injuries.
Right. Okay.
These injuries or anticipation of injuries, again, stimulates a number of other peptides which are called growth factors. So there are growth factors like EGF, epidermal growth factor,
right,
or nerve growth factor called NGF.
Right.
There are very beautiful experiments which show that these growth factors are not only triggered by injuries, they are triggered even by anticipation of injuries.
Mm.
Okay. And these growth factors are involved in so many things. EGF is involved in beta cell regeneration, beta cells that make insulin.
Really?
EGF is involved in stem cell division. Okay. EGF is involved in wound healing. And so
yes,
on.
Yes.
Right. So when our injury anticipation and the frequency of actually getting minor injuries has reduced so much, now there is a growing deficiency of growth factors in our life.
This is so intriguing, and I'll tell you why. And we have to take a break because we're going long here. This is intriguing because when we look at social paradigms that are shifting, there are great shifts towards men being more feminized. Aggression is seen as a bad thing. And when we talk about aggression from this standpoint, from an ecological process, from a evolutionary process, it's clear that aggression actually could potentially be playing a role. Dr. Watfi, I don't believe that just one thing is causing the obesity epidemic. I believe that there's a plethora of reasons that have all come together at one time to cause obesity in the epidemic levels that we have today. And one of those things could very well be that we have been bred out of aggression. Aggression is not a popular thing any longer. That's very interesting. We have to take our break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Dr. Miland Watfi. If you want to get this book, and it's a great book, it's called Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes, A Darwinian Interpretation of Type 2 Diabetes and Related Disorders. There's two ways to get it. You can go to Amazon.com to get the hardcover, or you can go to Springer for the ebook. So if you are one of those people who is anxious and don't want to wait for the book to ship to you, Amazon.com or Springer, I guess that's Springer.com, and download the ebook there. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio, where we will keep aggression alive. We'll be right back.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
You already know the benefits of red light therapy. Now you have to find the strongest, best one out there at the best price, right? That's where Scott Chevrolet found himself. He had to create Mito Red Light so you can get the strongest, best red light therapy unit in the world at the absolute best price. And the Superhuman Nation gets an additional discount. Go to MitoRedLight.com and use code SHR to get the lowest price anywhere, plus free shipping inside the USA and deeply discounted shipping worldwide. Go to mitoredlight.com and use code SHR today. That's MitoRedLight.com.
There's a phenomenon today. So many of us sit for hours each day. Slowly, our bodies respond by shortening certain muscles. The psoas gets shorter and shorter over time. It leads to lower back problems, stiffness when standing, and inhibits your running performance. Now there's PsoRite.com. That's PsoRite.com. PsoRite is a device that allows you to stretch your psoas muscle and return them to normal function. And it does it better than any stretching movement or chiropractic adjustment. adjustment can. You can use it in your home, office, or at the gym. Experience what thousands of people already know. Check out PSO-RITE.com and save 20% off when you use the code SHR.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Milan Watvi about his book, Doves, Diplomats and Diabetes, a Darwinian interpretation of type 2 diabetes and related disorders. You can get the book at Amazon.com or the ebook at Springer.com. I want to stay with this concept for a little longer and forego my next question, because we'll save that to later in the show. Since we're talking about aggression, we're talking about the effects of aggression on the brain.
So basically, I would differentiate between aggression and violence.
Yes, of course, of course.
So the modern society should be based on, or should be going towards, zero violence.
Yes, right?
That is desirable.
Yeah, violence and aggression are two very different things. You can be aggressive in a sport, and and you're not perpetrating a crime, and that's not what we're saying here. But in both chapter 6 and chapter 7, you talk about of soldiers and diplomats, and you characterize these two types of personalities, if you will, and when to express aggression and when to suppress it. So let's address when to express aggression and when to suppress it as an example of, we're not promoting violence here.
Yes. Well, if you look at the origin of aggression, there are two natural causes of aggression. One is related to food. The other is related to sex and reproduction.
Interesting.
Okay. And then, aggression is risky, and therefore you should use it very discriminately, only when needed, right? And therefore, when you just had food, when you have a stomach full, or when you have sufficient fat in the body, you should avoid aggression. Okay. Now visualize typically what happens over a kill in an African savanna. A large number of hyenas and lions and all kinds of predators and scavengers have to fight for their share.
Right.
Now, if you already have a stomach full, then why should you go and fight? Because that is unnecessarily risky. You are not desperate for food. Right? And therefore, storing of fat is negatively correlated with aggression, and there are a number of biochemical pathways through which this happens. So fat is negatively correlated to aggression both ways. So it's a two-way causation. If you have more fat, you would be less physically aggressive. Well, you might be verbally aggressive. That's an entirely different body.
Right.
Okay. I'm talking about physically aggressive. If you are fat and particularly have abdominal fat, then you are less likely to be physically aggressive. On the other hand, if you are aggressive, you are less likely to accumulate abdominal fat, because, again, there are pathways that do it.
Interesting.
Okay, so for example, testosterone, which is related to aggression, increases the beta adrenergic receptors on fat cells. Now, these receptors take the sympathetic signal, and that sympathetic signal is lipolytic, right? So if you have a combination of testosterone and sympathetic activity, then the abdominal fat is burnt off very quickly, right? And therefore, a man with high testosterone is less likely to be abdominally obese.
Right.
And there is plenty of data showing this, right? So there is a two-way negative relationship between fat and aggression, and particularly abdominal fat and aggression. The same is true. So if you have a stomach full or if you have stored fat, then you will avoid aggression. The second is, if you have lost your reproductive potential, then again a major motivation of aggression is lost.
Wait, if you've lost your what?
Reproductive potential.
Ah, yes, of course, right.
Right. Then of course, then again, the one major motivation of aggression has lost, so you will become non-aggressive. The third is, if you are weaker than the opponent, then it is wise to avoid aggression.
And there's been recent studies to identify the linkage between testosterone and aggression. Okay.
Yes.
And and because there's always a lot of discussion about testosterone begets aggression and violence, and the recent research that was done on rodents, where they gave they castrated rats and then they injected them with the equivalent of 7,000 times the normal testosterone levels that they would produce in a single day.
Yes.
And they put them and confronted them in several social situations, and what they learned was that testosterone did not keep them from reading social signals. So they put them with another castrated rat, and they antagonized the rat, and the rat did not attack the castrated rat because he sensed that there was no threat. Okay?
Right.
But what they did determine was once the rat did decide that there was a legitimate threat, the testosterone caused a greater response in aggression. But it did not cause misdirected aggression.
Yes.
Interesting.
So the testosterone aggression, in fact, aggression is highly context sensitive, right?
Right.
And if some person shows a context insensitive aggression, I would say that is pathological.
Yes.
Okay. So aggression is highly context sensitive.
Yes.
And the context, so there are, these three contexts, that your desperation for food, your desperation for sex and reproduction. And the third is, how do you weigh yourself against the opponent? If you weigh yourself as weaker, then you will avoid aggression.
Right.
So the muscle power or muscle strength as well as muscle energy supply is also extremely important. So for example, they upregulated the enzyme called PEPCK in muscle. Nothing else. Just one enzyme was upregulated, which changes the metabolism and the muscle become almost immune to fatigue. And these rats became aggressive.
Hmm.
Okay. You didn't give any hormone or it didn't make change, any neuronal change. Just the muscle energy supply was increased and these animals became aggressive. Okay. So, sensing, somewhere the body senses how your muscle are. What is the condition of your muscle and bone? And then your aggression also depends upon your own judgment of your strength.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
interestingly, these PEPCK muscle overexpression animals were also extremely insulin sensitive.
They're insulin sensitive.
Right.
Okay, so what signal do they get? So in other words, when insulin is high, does it create a greater sense of muscle strength, or when insulin is low?
No. When you are insulin sensitive, when insulin is low.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So when you're sensitive to insulin, as opposed to being insensitive or near diabetic, the greater the insulin sensitivity, the greater the muscle function.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes
sense. On the other hand, high levels of insulin increase a diplomat kind of behavior. That is, it increases memory and some kind of problem solving and cognitive tasks, and decreases rapid action and aggression.
Interesting.
And risk taking. Okay. See, insulin has a lot of behavioral effects, which are independent of glucose. So regulating glucose is only one of the things that insulin does in the body. Insulin does so many things in the body. Okay. Somehow we have associated insulin with glucose because that was one of the first things to be discovered.
Right.
Okay. But now we know that insulin is involved in so many things. It is involved in sexual behavior. It is involved in risk-taking. It is involved in memory, cognition, and so on. Okay. So when you say insulin levels are high or low, it is not only glucose that is affected. Everything is going to be affected.
Because the body, interprets when insulin levels are low, if I'm understanding this, the body, the message the body gets is possibly it's time to feed again. So the muscles will appear stronger. The body is readying itself for the potential dangers involved in foraging.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, that could be true. On the other hand, the insulin levels are high when you need to be socially manipulative. And this has been beautifully demonstrated in chimpanzees and bonnet macaques. Okay? So you have, let us say, an alpha male who is strong, dominant, and there are many subordinate males. People have measured C-peptide level, which reflect actually insulin levels in their body. The dominant and strong males, and it is not only restricted to males, but there are more studies on males. The dominant individuals are insulin sensitive, and the weaker and subordinate individuals are more insulin resistant. And this is there in normal social primates in the absence of any dietary intervention.
That was my question. See, that's my question. So, could insulin sensitivity changes in the landscape of insulin sensitivity, do they occur independently of dietary interventions? In other words, I always think of insulin as a response to postprandial meals production. But are some people just going to become insulin insensitive at different times as a result of the social signals they're getting?
Yes. So I'm not denying that insulin responds to diet. Insulin does respond to diet, of course. But if you look at fasting levels of insulin, right, then it relates to social status and social behavior.
I'll be darned. So if the goal is to be leaner, then what social, because actually, I don't want to say that yet, because that's actually the next question I have for you. When we come back, we have to take a break. Why population density matters? And I have a feeling that this is leading into that, is it not?
Yes, it is.
So let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. This is an intriguing discussion, looking at the etiology of disease, not as something that has gone wrong, but as part of the evolutionary landscape. You must get this book, folks. This book is a game changer. You can get it at Amazon.com in hardcover or download it as an ebook at Springer.com. Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes, a Darwinian interpretation of type 2 diabetes and related disorders. This is amazing. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There's a phenomenon today. So many of us sit for hours each day. Slowly, our bodies respond by shortening certain muscles. The psoas gets shorter and shorter over time. It leads to lower back problems, stiffness when standing, and inhibits your running performance. Now there's PsoRite.com. That's PsoRite.com. PsoRite is a device that allows you to stretch your psoas muscle and return them to normal function. And it does it better than any stretching movement or chiropractic adjustment. You can use it in your home, office, or at the gym. Experience what thousands of people already know. Check out PSO-RITE.com and save 20% off when you use the code SHR.
Quest Nutrition makes bars, cookies, chips, and pizzas out of complete dairy-based proteins. Our products minimize net carbs and sugar without sacrificing taste. Each delicious chocolate-flavored chip, cookie chunk, and crunchy crumble is custom-made to maintain Quest macros. It's time to enjoy foods that work for you, not against you. It's time to enjoy your Quest.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Livon Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Livon's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl L-carnitine, and alpha lipoic acid to where they need to be, your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Who wants to have better sex? That's a stupid question. Everybody wants to have better sex. And you can start having better sex if you go to the website bluechew.com, B-L-U-E-C-H-E-W.com. Use the code SHR and get a free order of your choice of the only two FDA-approved drugs to treat erectile dysfunction, sildenafil or tadalafil. Best of all, they're chewable, so they start to work in minutes. Go to bluechew, B-L-U-E-C-H-E-W.com. Use code SHR and you will get your first order for free. You do have to pay $5 for shipping, but come on, it's an easy deal. Who wants to have better sex? Okay, get busy. You know how to do it.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good. Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yo, Mike Jett. You know, yeah, you this is an amazing interview. I don't know if many of you, I mean, the wheels in my head are spitting, Dr. Wafi, because we know that soon after young couples become married, they have children, and then they blow up like balloons with fatness. Yeah. And from the standpoint of evolution, this is the natural progression of what should happen to them, because the need for procreation has subsided. They've achieved that. Food is abundant. They have a refrigerator that's stocked all the time.
Yes.
And they must become more docile, less aggressive, because they're raising children. Bingo.
Yes.
This is amazing.
Yes. In fact, a number of things are behaviorally related to each other. By behavior, I mean behavioral strategies. Okay? The way you behave socially will influence your reproductive strategies. See, for example, if you are a weak animal and you are not going to get good chances of reproduction. Maybe if you are a male, you don't have good access to females because
right.
there are stronger males around. Or if you are a female, the stronger females have occupied the best nest sites and you are left with no good nest site. Okay, so this can happen. Now, if this happens, then the best strategy for you is to postpone your reproduction. And if you have to postpone your reproduction, then you have to do two things. You store energy right now with the assumption that you are going to reproduce later, right?
Right.
So storing fat is adaptive if you are weaker. The other thing is, just as you need to store fat, you need to avoid risks so that you ensure that you will live longer and wait for another opportunity to reproduce, because you cannot reproduce now.
Uh-huh.
So a number of things are interrelated, and accordingly, the biochemical pathways are also interrelated. So the pathway for regulation of food, the pathway for homeostasis of glucose, the pathway for ovulation and spermatogenesis cannot be independent of each other. They are all linked. And they are linked because there are behavioral linkages.
Yeah.
Right? Now, similarly, if the population density is high, you need to change your reproductive strategies. If the environment has a lot of opportunities to grow, then you will reproduce more. You will make more offspring, right? But on the other hand, if the environment is saturated, the population is saturating, then it is wiser to make fewer offspring but invest more in each. Okay, so the reproductive strategy change according to the population density. If there is a high population density, it also means that there is going to be more competition.
More competition, right.
Right. And therefore, if you are getting more food, you should store more food, because tomorrow you may not get.
I want to state the nuance of what you just said. So in other words, as populations become more dense, the body interprets this as there will be greater competition for food. And the signal is for the body to become, and I'm not talking about the thrifty gene, but the body to become more thrifty and to create more body fat, because as competition elevates, we may run out of food faster.
Right.
So what you're saying basically is, in highly populated environments, there is probably a tilting of the propensity to store body fat.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And then insulin plays a major role in so many things, right? So insulin resistance increases the investment in offspring by facilitating glucose transport across the placenta.
Uh-huh.
And on the other hand, insulin resistance reduces ovulation. Okay. Now, this is what ecologists have been calling R and K reproductive strategies. And R reproductive strategy is produce more offspring with little investment in each. And K reproduction is make fewer offspring but with greater investment in each. And insulin, and another molecule called adiponectin, which is also extremely important in diabetes, these two molecules seem to play the role of changing R and K, or refining R and K reproductive strategies. So insulin evolved for so many things. It not only evolved to regulate glucose, it evolved to modulate your social behavior, your reproductive strategies, your energy homeostasis, and so many things.
Wow. You know,
I'm sorry. Yeah, so if you want to understand an insulin, then you need to understand everything. Okay.
And that was what I was just going to say. I have to believe. Yeah. Okay. I sincerely believe that the wisdom and insight in your book can have profound implications on health. And that's the big word. Clinicians are already struggling just getting people to eat differently or move more often. And what you're talking about here is actually, in my humble opinion, a complete change in social structures on top of everything else. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you need a complete change in social structure. I will compare it with diet.
Okay.
We evolved for a Stone Age diet, for a Paleolithic diet, right?
Yes.
Today's diet is much different.
Yes.
But then, what dietitians advise us is not to go back to hunter-gatherer life. Right?
Yeah, but my audience, but Dr. Watfi, my audience doesn't listen to them because we do adhere to an ancestral diet. So that's the good news.
Yes. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, let's say if they say that, okay, you are deficient in calcium now, we don't change the entire diet. We take calcium pills. Okay? So similarly, we are missing certain hunter-gatherer behaviors now.
Right.
For which we don't have to go back to hunter-gatherer societies. We need to bring in the missing behaviors in the form of the rightly designed games and exercises.
And that's where it comes down to. So really, the kind of sports, whether it be powerlifting, for instance, where you're challenging your body with weights that scare you. I mean, when I think there's a lot of people in my audience will attest that when you're going for a one rep maximum in the squat, or in the bench press, you feel threatened. You feel like, wow, something could go really wrong and I could end up dead or I could end up victorious. And those minutes, those moments happen every week for many of us. That actually is beneficial.
Yes. But essentially, not just one kind of exercise. Okay. We are missing so many things. For example, we are also missing rapid nerve muscle coordination actions, right? The kind of things that you would require while chasing a fast-running prey. So we need a combination of exercises. So just resistance exercise is not enough. Just walking is not enough. Just swimming is not enough. We should have a mix of a variety of exercises that make up for all the missing behaviors.
Right.
And actually, we are designing such a set of exercises, which is due for clinical trials. Actually, we are preparing for these clinical trials, which should, if all goes well, sometime during 2013 itself, these clinical trials should begin.
And you know what, Dr. Watfi, we talk about on this show, instead of doing that slow, arduous cardiovascular training where somebody walks for an hour at 2.5 miles an hour, we talk about high intensity training where You are literally sprinting for 30 seconds on a bicycle.
Right.
And then, then you walk until you recover. Then you sprint again. And that type of training, it sounds to me, ecologically and evolutionarily, is more of what we need. Because that sprint brings the body to a heightened level where you feel like, well, maybe you're not, you don't feel the danger of chasing an animal, but it somehow brings the body to a very dangerous point where you're giving it everything you've got. You're breathing, VO2 max runs out, your heart is pounding, you're sweating, and then you collapse. That is actually good for us.
I agree. But then I will also add that this is not enough.
Okay.
You need exercise where you have to make a very quick decision, a fraction of a second decision, and act accordingly. Okay. So, for example, we have designed certain balls, which have, they are not actually balls. They have corners and edges. So the bounce is very unpredictable. Playing with a perfect round ball is something, but playing with a ball that has an unpredictable bounce, you need very high level of alertness.
Agility, yes. Wow. And you know what, Dr. Watfi, we have to take our last commercial break, but guess what the second hour of my show is about? Mm-hmm. We're talking about this subject during the second hour. We have a professional wrestler coming on to talk about training that enhances coordinated working relationships between the nervous system and muscular systems. Because even though wrestling may not put you, your life at risk, clearly these men choking each other, throwing each other, bouncing and so on, this is the kind of exercise that actually can enhance neuromuscular reactions. And we're going to be talking about during the second hour. What a fantastic discussion we're going to have during the second hour. This is a fantastic book. I would implore and inspire any of you who really want to take your knowledge of disease states, the relationship between diet, exercise, and environmental signals to a completely new level, to spend the money and get this book, Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes, A Darwinian Interpretation of Type 2 Diabetes and Related Disorders by Dr. Milan Watfi. It's at Amazon.com, and the ebook is at Springer.com, Springer Books. This is not an inexpensive book, but it is well worth every single penny. It is a game changer. Clinicians, you doctors who listen to the show, you must buy this book. It will help you. It will help you help your patients. Because remember, diabetes is not a disease, it's a condition. It's completely reversible in 99% of the people who suffer from type 2 diabetes. All right, stay tuned. Right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Livon Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Livon's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl L-carnitine, and alpha lipoic acid to where they need to be, your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Quest Nutrition makes bars, cookies, chips, and pizzas out of complete dairy-based proteins. Our products minimize net carbs and sugar without sacrificing taste. Each delicious chocolate-flavored chip, cookie chunk, and crunchy crumble is custom-made to maintain Quest macros. It's time to enjoy foods that work for you, not against you. It's time to enjoy your Quest.
Are you still on the fence about Body Protection Complex BPC Oral from DrSeeds.com? Listen to Maggie Kuhn, one of the owners of the C-Bus Lifting Company gym in Columbus, Ohio.
I had been having some nagging tendon issues that weren't injuries, just things that were annoying. You know, I'm 58 years old, so just older tendon kind of issues. For us powerlifters, you know, we really don't stop training when we have just nagging issues. We just kind of keep pushing through. And I started the BPC. What I noticed was I was doing some heavy tricep stuff that that would have killed me before when I had an elbow problem, and I was able to do those with literally no pain at all.
Go to DrSeeds.com, DrSeeds.com. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your bottle of BPC Body Protection Complex today.
Hey, this is Carl. For 14 years, you've heard me talk about CanSee eye drops, and they being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at now 61 years old. But I regularly get emails and messages from people who've been using CanSee and having some amazing results. Recently, I got an email from a fellow named Chad, who because he was on dexamethasone eye drops for over 6 months, developed a cataract. CanSee eye drops actually reduced my cataract to the point where even my doctor has a hard time finding it. I will never stop using CanSee eye drops twice a day. I've been using them since 2008, he says. And you should be too. There is no better way to keep your eyes healthy and seeing clearly than CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com today and get on board, and we will both be looking into the future with very
clear. Who wants to have better sex? That's a stupid question. Everybody wants to have better sex. And you can start having better sex if you go to the website bluechew.com, BLUECHEW.com. Use the code SHR and get a free order of your choice of the only two FDA-approved drugs to treat erectile dysfunction, sildenafil or tadalafil. Best of all, they're chewable, so they start to work in minutes. Go to bluechew, BLUECHEW.com. Use code SHR and you will get your first order for free. You do have to pay $5 for shipping, but come on, it's an easy deal. Who wants to have better sex? Okay, get busy. You know how to do it.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
And on the cool check-in, center stage on the mic.
Welcome back.
And we putting it on wax. It's the new style.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by TNA superstar Rob Terry as we talk about the type of training that is required to be an amazingly agile athlete at 300 pounds of solid muscle. I've met Rob at the both the Arnold recently and then a local event here in Louisville, Kentucky. And the guy is he's amazing monster of an athlete and super agile. He can leap, he can roll, he can jump, he can turn, he can throw other human beings through the air. And he is hypermuscular and super lean. And so we're going to be talking more about that later in the show. Dr. Watfi, what do you want, or what are your hopes? This book is an amazing book. I have to tell you something. And what it potentially can do for health in general is profound. What do you want clinicians who read this book to take away from it?
Yes. A number of things. Number one, we are saying that type 2 diabetes and a number of related disorders are not only about insulin and glucose. There are a large number of molecules involved. Okay, so all these pathways are elaborated in the book, and it's all driven by brain and behavior. Yeah. Okay, so just relying on sugar is not enough. We need to look at, well, the diabetes researchers particularly need to look at a number of other parameters which would be better than plasma glucose to monitor the progress, okay, and to predict and to prevent complications of diabetes. Number two, there is nothing in type 2 diabetes which is by nature irreversible. So in principle, diabetes should be completely reversible. Well, with the exception of extreme complications like end-stage nephropathy and so on.
Right.
But there is nothing in diabetes in general which is not reversible. So in the long run, we should evolve ways to reverse diabetes. I would even say cure diabetes. Okay, so which is in principle possible, but we have to work towards it. So a lot of research is needed. What has opened up is a new way of thinking, but this is not the end of it. This is the beginning.
Yeah.
And a lot of research is needed so that we actually work out ways and show that diabetes can be cured.
You know, I hope this book is written for clinicians, correct? That was the purpose of the book, right? For clinicians?
Not really. This is for a wider audience. Okay. Anyone who understands science, anyone who understands biology, are very basics of medicine. Okay. So it could be a student of biology, a student of medicine, a person who is at high risk of diabetes, or a diabetic himself,
right,
or clinicians. Okay. So it was a difficult choice, because the basic aim was to put across a new way of thinking, right? And to address it to a narrow audience was perhaps not a good thing to do. Okay, so this is the first book on this line of thinking. So I thought of making it a more broad-based. I think anyone who understands biology, the basics of biology, would be able to follow it.
And that's what I was going to say. This book may seem like it's written for clinicians, but I read the book, and I have to read it again, because I read it, I gleaned it for the interview, and I am going to read it again. I have to tell you that I think anybody who is either a personal trainer, if you're working with clients to help them with disease states, if you are a nurse practitioner, if you are a dietitian, whoever you are, if you are working with people to help them overcome these modern diseases, this book is a game changer, and it will make you a more successful practitioner. And if you're an individual who just loves knowledge and information like I do, you've got to buy this book. You've got to buy this book. It's fantastic. There is nothing out there like this book. There's lots of books out there about diet and exercise as it relates to type 2 diabetes. But there's nothing that looks those books are like looking at one star. This book is like backing up and looking at the entire cosmos and saying, here's really what's going on. It's not just that one star. It's the entire cosmos that has to be taken into account when we look at this disease. Because as I've said before, this disease, when I often think about blood sugar elevation, well, first of all, we know that glucose signaling is which speeds cellular senescence. That fact alone makes me think, okay, why does evolution require that the more sugar in your blood, the faster you get old? It would seem that high blood sugar level is a signal that the species is somehow nearing its end. So why is that? What the body is perfect. What is it that what is the body trying to tell us? And it's an amazing concept, but this book really starts to scratch the surface of not looking at the disease as some mishap, but in fact, exactly what is supposed to happen when all these other things go wrong. It's brilliant. I love the book, Dr. Watfi. I love the book.
Thank you.
A great contribution to science. I predict that this book will be used and what comes from your research. I can't wait to hear. I want you to be back on the show when you start talking about the different modalities of exercise that incorporate aggression and spontaneous thought to respond, agility and so on, and how that affects the physiology of a human being. Great stuff. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Dr. Watfi.
Thank you. I enjoyed it too.
Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to a guy who is hypermuscular, hyperlean, very agile, and without realizing it, practices a lot of the things that Dr. Watfi talks about. And we're going to learn how he does it and what makes him the best. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.